Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eric, and with me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And this week, we've got a lot of Deathwatch to go over. The Warhammer community page brought us quite a bit of insights into the ultra elite of the Space Marines. In addition to that, we had two major tournaments over the weekend with some major rumblings of the local meta, so can't wait to talk about those. And of course, we've got our next events coming up for next week, so you can plan ahead for your tournament schedule. So Ray, let's talk a little bit about, Deathwatch. We had some concerns whether the new elite guys could hang with the current meta. So far, some of the leaks show some pretty nasty, dirty tricks.
Yeah. So, starting on Tuesday, they decided to start talking about Deathwatch. And one of the first things that they decided to talk about, of course, is how the Primaris are going to take part. So the Intercessors, I guess, are going to take the center stage of the Primaris group. Did they give it a name? Is it like called a Primaris squad, or that was one thing I didn't catch?
That's what I'm just double checking here real quick. It's a Primaris kill team. That's how they're calling it.
So the Intercessors are the base. They're the ones you're going to have the most of and where you start with. They get the special issue ammunition, which I figure we'll mention in a little bit. You can add in the others, though, just to give your squad a bit of added strategery. For instance, if you decide to add at least one Reaver, you give the squad the special rule Terror Troops, which is enemy units must subtract one from their leadership characteristics while they are within 3 inches of any Reaver unit or unit that includes any Reaver models. What does this mean? Well, it means two things. Extra bit of strategery in the Intercessor unit if you throw a Reaver in. But it also means you can still run a full squad of Reavers. It's not going to be Intercessor squad add-in only. The next thing they mention are the Aggressors. Now, Aggressors overall I'm rather fond of. Not 100% for sure if I'd want to throw them in with the Intercessors, as opposed to run them on their own, but if you do, either way you choose, they give the squad the Relentless Advance, which is a unit of Intercessors that includes any Aggressors does not suffer any penalty to their hurt rolls for advancing and firing assault weapons, or for moving and firing heavy weapons. That's pretty nice if you're giving your guys those two options outside of the standard bolt rifle. We've got the Interceptors. Kind of an interesting choice if you choose to put this in a group of intercessors, because main jump units, the Inceptors, have a much larger movement stat. But if you choose to do that, they get the Inceptor Strike. Inceptors can move across models and terrain as if they were not there. In addition, when a unit of Intercessors that includes any Inceptors fall back, it can shoot later that turn as if it could fly. So it's kind of nice. You're slowing your Inceptors down quite a bit, though.
No, but you're bringing a lot of resiliency back to your Intercessor squads. You got to remember, you don't have a whole lot in your army to begin with, just because of the points values and simply not a lot of options, especially now in this land of rule of three. So the idea that they can fall back, blow your opponent, you know, off the table, assuming that you survive the initial charge. So it's still pretty neat. So yeah, you only need like one or two of these models and you're good to go.
Yeah. And then it talks about Hellblasters, which Unfortunately, they don't offer any special rules to an intercessor squad, but you can still put them in there. I guess you can do it if you want to try to keep your Hellblasters from getting wiped too quickly, because then you can have everybody else out first. But I was kind of let down by that. And of course, being Hellblasters, the only thing that would have the special issue ammunition would be their pistols. But it does at least give them the capability of having those weapons.
It does, and I think that's kind of the upside to this, is that you have access to the upgraded plasma weaponry, and you still have a chapter master type ability where you can reroll. Well, we're assuming that rerolling ones to hit if you're close by, so it gives them some necessary firepower. Although, if you start when you start breaking down the special ammunition, makes you wonder if you really need it, because it becomes a much more select target that you're going to be using.
Yeah. One thing I thought was pretty cool was the author of this article introduces a couple of ideas for squads specializing in certain things. They mention a close assault specialist squad, a firebase squad, and then an assault firebase squad. So kind of give you give you a bit of an explanation of how it can be useful, which is kind of nice, actually. You don't really see that too often.
No, you don't. You know, it's usually their suggestions are kind of lore-based or just kind of, wouldn't these look cool together? And there actually is a little bit of thought going into this. Now, these fully optimized choices, we honestly need to see the whole deck to really understand all the possible choices, but you get what they're going at, where the designers were trying to get you to mix and match each of the individual units. So rather than taking like, well, okay, what's the best choice of what Ray just read, you can kind of mix and match and go like, well, I like this idea and I like that idea with this, you know, different type of loadouts. So each of your squads fills another role. Meanwhile, you're not abusing the rule of three, because these are all troop slots. So it's kind of nice.
Interestingly enough, this might be the only way as of right now for Hellblasters to become troops along with all the others.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. That's a good point.
Kind of a weird instance.
So yeah, so if you want to look at it, each squad has that additional tax, for lack of a better term, of 5 intercessors, and then you get 5 additional choices of mixing and matching Reavers, Hellblasters, Aggressors, whatnot. You also remember too that you can swap out a lot of the equipment that the intercessors will have, so you can kind of mix and match based on what you need. So, yeah, I was kind of getting excited. I was hoping the aggressors would get the special ammunition. That did not come to pass, which they allude to later in, it's this article or a future article. Didn't throw in the week, but it does make, you know, some interesting ideas. You know, the idea of being able to have a squad that maybe moves and shoots, although you did bring up a cool point. They need to move and shoot. Well, they need to, because the aggressor is got a whopping 4-inch movement, so he's going to be advancing almost every turn if you want to successfully do that. The interceptor is definitely the internet darling at this point, to give your ability to fly, which, yeah, being able to fall back and still shoot with the amount of firepower that Death Watch have, it's pretty neat. So it's a nice blend. One thing I have not seen, though, and it might be the case, is can intercessors take the Fragstorm cannon thingy? Death Watch had that really nasty auto cannon that, like, basically was like a last cannon flamethrower.
So my understanding is no, they cannot. You got to remember that nowadays what we're seeing with GW is what you get is what comes in the box.
True. So I didn't know, because still haven't seen the Primaris upgrade kit, so we're curious to see what that looks like. So
there is no Primaris upgrade kit for the Death Watch. I was looking at the White Dwarf, and it is in fact the newest, the Death Watch upgrade kit is the same one they've had before. Mm-hmm. Talking to some people, that is mostly because with the shoulder pads being the same size between the Primaris and the original, there is no need to really change anything out.
Oh, okay. For some reason I thought the shoulder pads were bigger, but okay, that's cool.
That's what I was told by a few people anyway. I was just going to be looking at all the pictures. It looks like the same shoulder pads as in the past, so.
So other fun stuff that was released about the Death Watch, which is kind of neat. They brought back, in the old, as we mentioned, what was once a formation is now either a stratagem or some sort of special ability. And I think the biggest thing, because as I mentioned, I really love Death Watch. It'd be the only Imperial army I would play. When they first came out way back when in White Dwarf, I think in 4th edition, 3rd edition, they were, first of all, the whole unit, whole kill team was a HQ choice. But a lot of the cool gadgetry you had to buy in points as war gear. So if you're like, wow, I got this really awesome army. If I go up against Necrons, I got all this super gear that makes it, really effective. And then you end up going against Tyranids, and you're like, oh, none of this really helps. So I think one thing they've done a nice job is they brought back a lot of those mechanics and those abilities, but they made it a way where your list isn't, oh, darn, I chose the wrong Xenos to hunt this week. So, kind of, as my friend used to always talk about, it's like the old Bugs Bunny cartoon, rabbit season, duck season, rabbit season, and they always brought the wrong weapon. So, the key thing what they did was they brought back, this was used to be formations, and now they brought back basically at the start of the game, you choose what battlefield role your army is targeting. So either be troops, HQ, fast attack, heavy support, you name it, flyer, I think it has its own now. You choose that and you get bonuses to wound. I believe it is reroll ones to wound.
Reroll wound rolls of one.
Yeah. So when you think about that now, at first it feels like, oh, wow, they nerfed Death Watch before they came out, because with the rule of three, it used to be like, oh, I'm playing a guy who spammed whatever, and you could choose whatever that battlefield role is. So if they, for example, they took their whole army is nothing but three Vanguard choices, well, they've got at least 9 Elite choices. I will choose to be targeting Elites, so I'll be rerolling ones to wound with Elite choices. You'll probably only be targeting 3 data slates, but there's quite a few armies that specialize in one particular area, usually a little heavier in one area. And at the end of the day, troops is one of those choices. So I still think it's a pretty hefty, nifty little gizmo. On top of that, there is a stratagem for each one of those, and it got buried in the stratagem article, and I was like, oh, I didn't read that and didn't pick up on that. So let's say you're targeting fast attack. You're up against somebody and you're already rerolling once, and then you can spend another 2 command points and then add a +1 to your wound rolls for that particular unit. What's nice is it doesn't have to be the same one. So let's say you're rerolling ones to wound versus fast attack, but then I've played a stratagem and I'm +1 the wound versus all elites. That can also be a nifty thing. So you could have a lot of specialized, but it seems like you really need to focus fire on particular units each turn and really make your opponent burn. Individually, as I mentioned, back in the old days, they had all these cool war gear that was designed to take out various Xenos scum. And hurts my soul to say that. And now they are stratagems. So with no further ado, so if you're hunting Necrons, and poor Ray got to hear my little history lesson about this, but you old-time Necron players will get a good chuckle out of this. For 1 command point, all Necron units with reanimation protocols within 12 inches of Death Watch unit from your army, the opponent subtracts 1 from reanimation protocols. So I kind of butchered that, so let's go through that slowly. First of all, it's a 12-inch range from the Death Watch unit that you're playing the stratagem on, and you're basically negating the effect of a cryptic. And if you don't have a cryptic, you're in a lot of trouble, because now you're -1 from your reanimation protocols. And So that's pretty handy. So the idea is that the Xenos hunters know exactly where to hit the Necron so they don't come back, kind of think headshots and zombie games. So and this dates back to the original Necron Codex when they used to have campaign rules in the back. And Necrons had the unique distinction of, well, they're just a faceless horde, so your opponents get better at killing you, and this was one of the abilities. I was like, really? This next one's interesting, especially because this codex hasn't come out yet, but against orcs, you have Stem the Green Tide. Use the stratagem immediately before firing Overwatch with a Death Watch unit from your army against the charging orc unit. Your opponent must subtract one from their charge distance for each model in the charging unit that was slain by unit's Overwatch fire. And that's two command points. Kind of on the fence about this one, Ray.
Yeah. I agree with you. It's about as odd as what you'd expect from the orcs. So they take two guys out, their charge drops 2 inches. Okay. I think on your average Overwatch with a kill team, I don't expect to see too many kill teams that are 10-man sized. So, we're looking at one or two guys at the most, I figure, getting dropped. So, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference. It's just going to be another dice game. It's just that you have to worry about that. That 2-inch charge may still not work. But most likely it will still work.
Yeah, they bring up a couple points and you know, my first thought was, wow, that's really cool because, you know, orcs splatter pretty easily as long as I roll sixes. You know, it's that whole, it's only on Overwatch. It's like, ah, okay. So, yeah, even if you take off 2-3 inches, it would have a major effect and also their ability to wrap around you. And so if you go back to, you spent the point for the intercessor and you want to fall back and shoot again, well, if he gets a good enough charge roll off, he's going to surround you and you won't be able to back up. But the author brings up a good point, is using combi flamers, either regular combi flamers or take the flamers on the aggressors. So now you're auto-hitting. It's like, whoa, that could get... Now you're talking about, you know, maybe crippling a potential charge.
You are auto-hitting, but remember that if they're charging from outside the range of the weapon, you don't get to use that weapon.
True. So the average flamer is 8 inches. So you're probably right. You have to... You would trade off. Good news is you're auto-hitting. Bad news is you'd probably have to kill at least 4 orcs to make this charge challenging. So,
and if any army is going to be able to roll 3 dice and to charge, it'll be orcs.
Probably. But we will see when that codex comes out. By the way, we have no inside knowledge. That's merely speculation on our part.
Yeah, we really don't.
We would love to. We would share it left and right. But, oh well, we are not privileged. Anyway.
Unless it was you.
Yeah, exactly. So, the next one is interesting. Tyranid Synapse Severance for 2 command points as well. Use the stratagem immediately before choosing targets for a Death Watch unit. For your army in the shooting phase, this unit can target synapse creatures this turn, even if they are not the closest enemy unit. So it's kind of...
So I think it's important to remember in this case that you're not using this against things like Hive Tyrants or Trigon Primes or Old One-Eye. Well, maybe Old One-Eye. But you're using this against the smaller things, the Neurothropes and... The Broodlord, things like that, the small things. The ones that can hide behind troops.
And what's nice is I think you do bring enough firepower where you could actually kill one of these characters with one shooting phase. So therefore, you know, the 2 CP could be pretty devastating. Correct me if I'm wrong, the Neurothrope is the one that creates the screen, so they're all -1 to be hit.
That's the
Venomthrope.
The Neurothrope is the the character version of the Zoanthrope. I believe what you're thinking of is the Malanthrope from Forge World.
I think that or the Venomthrope is what I'm thinking of. I can't remember. So
Venomthropes aren't characters. Problem.
Still want to kill them. I hate those damn things. But killing off a Broodlord, that'd be handy. Because those things are nasty as well. And like you said, they're hiding in the back, surrounded by a screen. You can't never get to them. And then they spring out and heroically intervene and smash you to bits. I hate them things. So it's pretty neat. I think the fact that you pay only 2 command points as opposed to putting it into your list is kind of nice. This next one, I know I play this faction, so it's like probably hits me harder. But I read this and went, are you kidding? This is super useful. So once again, for 2 command points, you have Intercepting Volley. Use this stratagem immediately after your opponent moves an enemy Eldari unit. So that's Craft World, Drukhari, as well as Harlequins.
And Unari. There's all of them. Blankets, all of them.
So blanket statement there. Anything with pointy ears. That includes the 2 of you who play Corsairs. So use a stratagem immediately after your opponent moves an enemy Eldari unit that can fly in their movement phase, which is like most. Pick a Death Watch unit from your army within 12 inches of it. You can immediately shoot at the enemy unit as if it were the shooting phase, but you must subtract 1 from all resulting hit rolls. So this is even...
I just want to... Yeah, I think we're about to talk about the same point here. So let's talk about the Eldari on the table. Jet bikes fly, tanks fly. Those annoying green goblin wannabes that you're probably going to see a crap ton of soon fly. Especially when it comes to Dark Eldar, anything that's not troops of some sort. Or infantry have the ability to fly. With the exception of the basic infantry and most of the Aspect Warriors, Craft World stuff flies. Harlequins. If you're fighting someone playing Harlequins, they're still going to be hard to hit, but almost everything flies except for their troops. In an army where almost everything flies, for 2 CP, you get to shoot on their turn. Granted, it has to move.
Wait, you're talking about it.
Oh, no, yeah, after your opponent. No, they don't have to move. They just have to have something that flies. Yep. So yeah, 2 CP, yep. You're shooting on your opponent's turn.
And it's move, not deep strike, not come in from reserves. And so if you look at some of the Grey Knight ability, I think the Space Marines have this similar stratagem as well. You could be already on the table, so you can just open fire. So think about that for a second. If I've turn 1, maybe you get a Dark Eldar player who's trying to charge you on turn 1, but so tunes 2, 3, and 4, you're exactly as Ray said, you're able to take out one of their units on their turn. That's for a total of 6 command points. Yikes! I mean, by the way, I'll switch our focus to fast attack, so I'm re-rolling 1s, and then if you're really having a tough time, you can also make a +1 to wound as well. That's just dirty. Oh.
Yeah. And there's a Watchmaster around, too.
That's right. Rerolling 1s to hit.
I think rerolling, because I think they're basically the Chapter Masters.
Yeah, I haven't seen it confirmed yet in the new Codex if they kept it that way. But if they do, yeah, that'd be disgusting.
All right. So next up, the Tau. This is a pretty good one.
Yeah. This is one of those, it was cool, but yeah, if you paid for it with war gear, you'd be like, crud, I didn't play Tau today. But now it's a stratagem, this thing's really cool.
And at 1 CP at that. Targeting Scrambler. Yep. Use a stratagem immediately after Death Watch unit from your army has been hit by one or more Tau Empire marker lights. Immediately remove all the marker light counters from the unit.
That phrasing is key. It's so key.
Yeah, it
doesn't,
it doesn't say remove the marker lights that drone got. Those drones got you with. You remove all of them. So if you know that your opponent's going to be using marker lights from multiple squads of drones, you can just wait for the second or maybe third time he hits you with the marker lights, pay the 1 CP, and they're all gone.
Yep, just scrape them off. Thanks, but no thanks. Don't eat them. So yeah, you know your Tau opponent's going to try and get up to 5 marker light hits as much as possible so he gets the maximum benefit. And then if he's going to allocate 2-3 units worth of marker lights to finally light up one of your squads, you can wait till he finally gets that 5th point. Oh, did you get 5 points on that one? Okay. Here's 1 command point. All those marker lights just went away. Boop. Sorry, no seeker missiles. Sorry, no rerolling ones to hit. No rerolling ones to wound. And I'm still getting a cover bonus. Sorry. It's just pretty rude. I think what I like about this is it goes right to the heart of each of these Xenos factions. Says, oh, what are you known for? We're going to mess with it.
Yeah. It definitely helps, considering that, for the most part, these guys are going to be a little bit more on the expensive side. It definitely helps out. Now, unfortunately, you're not always going to be playing Xenos if you're playing this, unless you're doing, you know, a narrative campaign or something along those lines. But, I mean, you're going to see a lot of... Well, there's a lot of Xenos out there anyway.
There's more than there ever has been, I think, so that's one good news. And I think a lot of what makes them work, so some of these stratagems, like we just rattled off 4 or 5 of them, the rest of their stratagems are pretty generic, so you can use them. So if you are facing chaos, well, let's just take that, you can still choose the appropriate force work slot that you want to target, and you're still getting all your hits, and the guns still hurt. So it's not like they don't do anything against Chaos or other Imperial armies.
Yeah. And there's actually one stratagem I would like to share for those going against, you know, it could be any army, basically, any army with a vehicle. That's the Tempest Shells. For 1 command point, you can use the stratagem before a Death Watch infantry model, so one guy, from an army attacks a vehicle with a weapon that can fire special issue ammunition. So no aggressors here. That model only makes 1 hit roll during the phase, but if it hits, the target suffers D3 mortal wounds. So something else when you're going up against someone using a lot of vehicles.
And also against, you know, those pesky characters where they've got the invulnerable save followed by a, you know, ignore wounds.
Nope.
Oh, it says vehicle?
It attacks a vehicle.
So.
Kronos, of course, can be an example of a character that you'd probably want to be shooting at that's a vehicle.
Yeah, it's true.
After all, he's in one.
So, some handy stuff there. So, there's quite a bit still in there. I like what I'm seeing so far, and it's one of those things where I'm kind of looking at my old Death Mask box. I'm going like, what I can rubbish through there and still come up with something. So, because we still haven't talked about, you know, Dreadnoughts. Oh, by the way, you know, everybody's kind of sour about no new models. Well, it's not just the Primaris Marines, which we've been talking about, but it's the transports, it's the Dreadnoughts, all that gets added into this codex. So, it's the first time this codex has had a transport other than the flyer, so I thought that's kind of neat.
Of course, they're still not going to let Primaris be in the flyer.
Yeah.
So,
oh well.
Don't I still love
that
flyer.
I think that thing's really cool. Yeah, I don't know if it still have all the same to handle these like cool defensive abilities that were really neat.
It is cool.
See if it still has that post codex. We're also seeing a couple leaks from the background, and it's interesting because we kind of talked about a little bit in the previous episodes of the show where what's going to happen once all the codices are out. You know, how do they, are they moving the storyline forward? Are they going to go deeper into the existing codices? Are they going to come out with a whole bunch of new aliens? What is it they're going to do? But, yeah, it's some pretty interesting stuff. There's one where there's three separate watchtowers that are trying to fight off a combined attack of Tyranids and Orcs, you know, being fought on two different fronts. There's one where there's a nifty story where a Homunculus captures several Primaris Space Marines and starts doing like experimentation on them. And the other kill team comes in to rescue them. And sure enough, the Genesis cauldrons are bubbling with a heretical new life forms, knowing that they cannot allow such genetic lore to fall into the hands of the Trukhari. Kill teams, Ultraian sacrifices themselves by triggering an exotrophic viral warhead they had brought with them, and the results are hideous but decisive. So it's kind of interesting to hear that, you know, the other races are mucking around with it. We know Fabius Bile wants to get his hands on a Primaris Marine. And then the last one, a little bit of foreshadowing here. Fort Starshield is, you know, on the edge. They're asking for reinforcements. It's quite clear that the Orcs are about to engulf them. The reinforcements show up a little late. And what they do find is all their battle brothers nailed to the wall of the watchtower. All their armor has been ripped off of them, and there's a giant branding of Ghaz Ghoul's glyph in each one of their chests. So, Orc players, I have a feeling your wait will be rewarded. Because, yeah, I feel bad for you guys that your codex is taking this long. Should wait too much longer. So pretty cool stuff. So yeah, I'd be curious to see how
shouldn't be too much longer,
Death
though.
Watch is going to be used in competitive play, whether it's a standalone army where people just kind of grab a detachment just to take advantage of the stratagems. Not sure how this wall will shake out.
But one of the interesting thing with Death Watch, one of the things I've been hearing some talk of is Death Watch and Astra Militarum. It's odd, but that's what I even actually heard that brought up on another podcast. The one Forge of the Signals of the Frontline. Yeah. I heard it on.
I mean, it's not a far stretch because you look at Adeptus Custodes players. You know, they're using usually have a small battalion of Imperial Guards, right off the bat, gives you that five extra command points and quite a few bodies along with some heavy mortar teams to develop some board control presence. So I'm not all that surprised. It's a pretty easy assumption. I'm just curious if that's really the best choice, or do you go with another Space Marine? I know Space Marines are kind of still trying to find their way in the post-FAQ meta, but I think there's some options there. No, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I probably agree with you. Obviously, Astra Militarum is just a quick way to get some fast command points real fast. So.
Not only that, but also just models, model count. Because otherwise, even if you're just doing Primaris, you're still not going to have a whole lot. You know, maybe 40
maybe,
guys.
Maybe, yeah, you're right. Yeah, so I'm curious to see what the point value is going to be. Are they going to be, from what some unreliable sources have told us, is that's going to be whatever the Primaris Marines are, and that's how much are going to be in the Death Watch book as well. But we'll see when it actually comes out. But yeah, it kind of gives you an idea that what kind of size armies you're going to be seeing. So. All right, any other thoughts on Death Watch?
I may or may not end up having a small force of it. That's about all I have to say about that.
Excellent. Well, I think many of us will probably be the same idea, toying with the idea. Whatever ideas that you guys come up with, hey, be sure to drop us a line on our Facebook page and let us know. We'll be more than happy to talk about it here on the show. Speaking of talking about things here on the show, coming up after the break, let's review last week's two major events. Oh, let me try that again. Coming up after the break, we will go over the two major tournaments that happened last weekend.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, guys, we are back. We got two major tournaments to talk about this week. First of all, we'll just let them know if the guys from GrotzCon, we saw that your event was listed on the schedule. However, as of recording tonight, the results are not entered into Vesco's pairings. So reach out to us if you have results. We'd love to talk about your event on a future episode. Meanwhile, let's head up from south of Canada to Seattle, Washington area, where we go to Storm of Silence. This is one of the big ones, but it's also one of the more vineyard, been around for quite some time tournaments. So if you ever get a chance to be in the Pacific Northwest, this is definitely one of the tournaments to attend. So looking at the top eight for this year's Storm of Silence, we come in number eighth, we have Aaron Becker with Alaytok. Seventh place, Rob Porter with Colt Mechanicus. In sixth place, Matt Johansson with Yanari. Fifth place, Kristid Bronson with Adeptus Custodes. In fourth place, Mr. Hellhound himself, Mitch Pelham with Talaran. He's having a pretty good 2 weeks there. Third, we have Matt Evans with Tyranids from the Colorado Cutthroats. Good to make the trip. In second place, we have Alexander McDougall, and he is playing Tyranids as well. And your 2008 Storm of Silence champion is John-Paul Mauwet, and this is the shocking part, folks. He's playing Drukhari. That's right. A Drukhari player went undefeated, as did a Tyranids player in this major tournament. Unthinkable here 2 months ago.
Okay.
Yes.
First question. Is it only Drukhari?
I'm glad you asked. Let's open it up and find out. Dun, dun, dun. This one is not. So it starts off with 2,000 points. It starts with a Blackheart Cabal Battalion. Comes with an Archon with Blaster and Labyrinth Cunning. Also comes with a second Archon with a Blaster, Phantasm Grenade Launcher, and the Writ of the Living Muse. So we talked about this before. The Labyrinth Cunning gives you the ability to get command points on a 6 every time you or your opponent spends command points. And the Writ of the Living Muse allows you to reroll 1s to wound, since the Archon native gives you reroll 1s to hit. It becomes very potent. He's got 5 units of 5 Cabalite Warriors, all with a Blaster. He's got 3 Ravagers with 3 Disintegrators. He's got 2 Raiders with Disintegrator Cannons and 2 Venoms. Looks like they're stock without just a single Splinter Cannon. He does also have an Alaytok Outrider detachment with a Farseer Skyrunner and 3 units of 5 Swooping Hawks with the Exarch. And then he follows it up with his third detachment of an Alaytok Air Wing with 2 Hemlock Fighters and a Crimson Hunter. Coming in at a cool 1,999 points.
Okay.
This is one of those lists you're like, okay, we get it. We know how it works. But it just baffles me. I'm like, oh, wow, that won a major tournament. That's, you know, you have to really, first of all, hats off goes to John-Paul Mauwet. He clearly knows what he's doing. He's been a top player for quite some time. But it's very interesting to see this list like this work this way. Nice benefits, though, especially when you think of, you look at the Hemlock Fighter with the Alaytok, that's been around for quite a long time here in the meta. So over 12 inches, it's actually -2 to hit at close range, at -1 to hit, and all the shenanigans it does to leadership. You mix that in with the Phantasm Grenade Launcher, so you can actually start removing models due to morale checks, which is kind of nifty. And then, of course, you've got the, I think the heart of any Drukhari list at this point is there's not one unit to go. If I kill that, the list collapses. I mean, every warrior squad has a blaster. There's three Ravagers. They all, you know, fire downfield. There's a lot there. And then he's got the Swooping Hawks as well, which are great for objective grabs as well as that grenade drop. So that is your winning list.
Okay.
Let's look at the Tyranid list that also went undefeated. This was Alex McDougall's list. And Alex is rocking a Hive Tyrant with Adrenal Glands, Monstrous Rending Claws, as well as Onslaught, Psychic Scream, and Twin Devourers with Brain Leech Worms and Wings. He also brought the Swarm Lord to go with him in this HQ slot. Filling out the rest of the battalion, he's got 17 Gene Stealers, 4 of them with Acid Maw and all of them with Rending Claws. A unit, another large unit of 29 Harmagaunts, and then another about average size 3 Ripper Swarms to fill out the troop slots. Then he's got a unit of 5 Hive Guard to round out the battalion. He then brings in a second battalion. These are Gene Stealer Cults. He's got a Magnus, a Primus with a Bone Sword. He's got a unit of, looks like, 9 Acolyte Hybrids. And then he's got 6 Acolyte Hybrids with heavy weapons, and all of them have the heavy rock saw. Follows it up with the Neophyte Hybrids. He's got 2 units of 8 of those. Then he swings back over to a Spearhead Detachment, mixing up even further. This will be Astra Militarum. And in there, he's got a Company Commander, a Tank Commander, a Command Punisher Tank, as well as 1, 2, 3 squads of 3 heavy weapon squads. And you guessed it, nothing but mortars.
Okay. This is actually kind of interesting. I like that list.
I like this list a lot because it's got like the best of everything. It's like, here's the post-FAQ version of what was winning with Tyranids. Here's a pretty much stock what people are taking from Imperial Guard to support every other army that exists in the world. We just talked about Death Watch and Adeptus Custodes. That's pretty much a, you know, with the exception of the Tank Commands, or that, I think that's a nice touch. And then, oh yeah, I see your FAQ and I laugh in your face because I'm taking Gene Stealer Cults. They're immune to deep striking outside of my deployment zone on turn one. The other thing I see what's neat about this list is a lot more heavy weapons. You got the heavy rock saw. You've got a lot more tanks than you usually see. Kind of neat. So it's definitely, a lot of people are predicting that the meta is now going to shift to the return of the rhinos and kind of the battalions, you know, the, what were the old Space Marine formations where they had, you know, you get the rhinos for free as long as you took like 6 squads of troops, you know, that sort of mentality that I'm going to fill the table with boxes, with metal boxes. Go ahead, try and take out my troops.
It's possible now that with the rule of three, there's only 2 types of units that aren't required to follow that, and that's troops and dedicated transports.
Right. So, interesting. Just because he came in third and a little bit of variety here, I wanted to go over the third place list that was also Tyranids, and it's a little bit different from what we just talked about. HQ slot, once again, we're starting with the battalion. And I apologize, both lists did not mention which high fleet they were playing, so I'll have to come back to you on that. But in the HQ slot, you got a Neurothrope as well as a Swarm Lord, which we just talked about. They're going to be bait for Death Watch Cop players. And then he's got 2 units of 20 Gene Stealers, or is it 19, trying to be cagey there, and 3 Ripper Swarms. And then he's got 1, 2, 3, this one he's got a unit of 6 Hive Guard. And then interesting here, he's got in the fast attack slot, he took 12 Gargoyles. He then, yeah. And then in the Supreme Command Detachment, he's running 1, 2, 3 Hive Tyrants. adrenal glands, monstrous rending claws, toxin sacs, two devourers with brain leech worms, and wings. Pretty much stock on all three.
I like.
And then last but not least,
gargoyles, of course.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, gargoyles. Yeah, I just want to throw in this. This will throw in a little interesting. And his third attachment is a fortification. He took a sporocyst with five barbed stranglers and a whole bunch of, I guess it creates a whole bunch of mucolid mines. So go ahead. You tell me, gargoyles and sporocysts, what do they do?
I like gargoyles because, well, they're a fast unit. They're not too far off of termagants, but they're faster. If you're willing to give them the points, you can give them all poison weapons. The fortification sporocyst? I don't know anything about that one. I didn't even know they had a fortification. But if it's to spew those out, I'm not surprised. That's kind of why I, you know, remember around the beginning of these guys coming out, two of the big things I was hearing about was the exocrines, and the other was biovores. Because you spew those things out and they're models. They don't move, but what they do is they hinder others, your opponent's movement.
It's a pretty neat list. I have to say I like the other one a little bit better, but I think just more to play style. I can't say one is superior over the other at one point. But a lot going on. I think interesting, and it's something I like about the game when you get to a point where that the codices are more than just model lists. So very cool.
All right. So tell me what happened in Texas.
Well, before we get there real quick, I just wanted to double check. Well, how does Adeptus Mechanicus get to the top eight?
Guard.
And here's why. A little bit of guard, but I think what's interesting is what he took in the Adeptus Mechanicus. So let's get the ugly stuff out of the way. So he took guard. So he's got company commander, rogue psyker, three units of 10 guardsmen, all with heavy weapon teams with the aforementioned mortar. He also took Sergeant Harker as well as two units of two basilisks. So he's going to sit in the back and rain death from afar. Well, wait, he also took another detachment. This is Adeptus Custodes. He's got a shield captain on a Dawn Wing. I can't never pronounce this right. Dawn Eagle bike. It's got three of those. And then here comes the Adeptus Mechanicus part. He took a Tech Priest. And looks like he took a Vanguard. He took not one, not two, but three units of 15 Fulgrite Electro Priests.
Mm.
And of course, along with Forge World Dogma of Stygies 7, or Stygies 8. 8, yeah, by Roman numerals suck. Okay. Yeah, I was wondering who would show up with one of these finally. So this was the list Don was trying to get me to play.
Well, at least as far as the Mechanica stuff goes.
Yeah. So for those who don't remember, Stygies allows you, very similar to Alpha Legion, there's a minus one to be hit over range of 12 inches, and there's a nifty scout move type thing. So yes, you can deploy outside your deployment zone easily within charge range, and now you come walking in with three units of 15 of these things, and they do damage when they hit, similar to the old Hammer of Wrath. They do a fair amount of damage, and if they actually kill a unit in close combat, their invul save improves from 5 up to 3 up for the rest of the game. Kill them before they touch you. But that is what happened in the Pacific Northwest. So, Ray, you want to head on to Texas?
Yes.
All right, let's head on down to Texas. So this is the Alamo GT, and times have changed. The Alamo GT is anything but a GT. It is a huge major at this point.
Hey, things are bigger in Texas.
GTs are bigger in Texas, just like everything else. It is a huge event, and if you have a chance to get out there, please do. But rounding out the top eight from this year's Alamo GT, we start off with number 8, William Albelez with Tau. You might recognize this name. He made the top 8 at LVO in many, at least last year, if not the year before. In seventh place, Thomas Reedy playing Thousand Suns. That name sort of ring a bell. Yeah, you might remember him from Bell of Lost Souls fame. That's Goat Boy. So one of those funky lists he talks about every Monday morning in this article. He actually played it. In sixth place, Bruce Merker of Alatok. Fifth place, Anthony Bellum with Tau Empire. Fourth place, Michael DeHeos with Inari. Third place, Colin McDade with Adeptus Custodes. No, folks, this is not a misprint. In second place, Nick Gower with Jukari. And in first place, your 2018 Alamo GT winner is Matthew Ali, also with Jukari. So you haven't been scoring at home. Two majors, first and second at one of them, and first place at the other one, all Jukari.
All right, so where do we want to start?
Well, let's take a look at these guys, Jukari, and we can compare and contrast. So when we looked at our last one from up in Seattle, it was a mishmash of a little bit of Eldar and a little bit of Dark Eldar as well. This one, both of these, actually had a chance to look at these ahead of time. Not a single craft world to be found.
Okay, what about Yunari?
No Yunari to be found either. These are pure Drukhari lists. Start with your first place. Starts off with a battalion. He uses a witch cult, Cult of Strife. So he's got Lilith. Gave him Blood Dancer. So it's not clear. Yeah, it's not his warlord, but he took that stratagem so he can give out warlord traits to the Hemoculus as well as the witch cult Archon? Leaders. Archon, yeah, thank you. Archon is in the Cabal. He can take. He has to be the warlord, and then you play the stratagem on him, and the succubus okay. And the Hemoculus get the abilities. So you got Lilith with Blood Dancer. If you don't remember that from Chapter Approved, every 6 to hit increase counts as 3 hits, and she. Oh, by the way, it comes with 7 attack space. Ow. Succubus with Arc Light Glaive, Blast Pistol, and then she's got 3 units of witches. 1 unit squad of 8, the other 2 squad of 5, but the important thing is all of them have shard nets, and also he tripped out all the Hecatrixes with agonizers and blast pistols. That completes your first battalion. Your second battalion, Prophets of the Flesh. He has 2 Hemoculus, both with electrocorrosive whips and splinter pistols. One of them has the Vexator Mask, which has some very complicated rules. It basically means he gets to swing first all the time, or he makes the unit always swing last. I'm still hazy on how that works. But the really nifty one is also the other Hemoculus comes with the Helm of Spite. So that's the nasty one. Allows the Drukhari to deny the witch, but if they are successful, the caster then takes up perils. He matches that up with 3 units of 5 racks, and then he outkitted their sergeants with an electrocorrosive whip as well. And then he comes in with his hammer bomb here of 9 grotesques. And looks like one of them has electrocorrosive whip as well. And then his third detachment. Yep, another. This one is a spearhead detachment at this point. So he's already at 11, 14 command points. He's got an Archon, Blaster, Huskblade, Labyrinth Cunning, and Writ of the Living Muse, which we talked about in previous lists. And he's got not one, not two, but 3 Ravagers with Disintegration Cannons. He also matched up with 2 Razorwing Jet Fighters, also with Disintegration Cannons. And he's also got 2 Raiders, Disintegration Cannons, and 2 Venoms stock. So Splinter Cannon and Twin Splinter Rifle.
I like this list.
I like this list too. So the way this works is you've got the Ark, the Cabal, you know, the Dark Eldar warriors with their Ravagers in the back, firing away, rerolling ones to hit, rerolling ones to wound. You've got plenty of the Raiders and the Venoms. The reason why he takes them in the Black Hand is that they get basically a 6-up feel no pain. The vehicles do for being part of that Cabal. The Prophets of the Flesh give them additional durability. 5 racks with a 4-up invul and then a 6-up feel no pain lasts a while. They're almost equivalent to 12 cultists at that point. So it's They don't hit that hard. No, they're not that much off, but they are definitely going to hold on to an objective. You're going to have a tough time getting them off for a while unless you really pour some firepower into them. The nine grotesques, when they come down, you're probably going to webway them in. They'll hit like a train wreck, and just when you think, fine, I'll just use my fly keyword to get away. Hope you don't have the infantry keyword because he's got those three witches with the shard dents. So what happens is as you try to fall back, you roll a d3, I roll a d6. If I roll higher, equal to or higher your die roll, you do not get the fallback. And it works on all infantry models.
Useful.
Very useful. And the key thing is, yeah, he's got the probably the witches, I'm guessing, are going into one of the transports, either the Raiders or the Venoms. So my guess is the larger unit, the 8-man unit, is going to one of the Raiders with some succubus and maybe one of the other leaders. That's what my guess is. And then he puts the other witches in the Venoms, the 5-man squads. So they are quickly approaching you on turn one.
Quick army.
But not to be outdone. Yeah. We got another Drukhari army that went undefeated in the same tournament. And guess what? Their army is fairly different.
Okay. Is it still all Drukhari?
It is still all Drukhari.
Okay. Let's hear it.
All right. So he starts out with a battalion, this time with a Witch Cult of the Red Grief. These are the guys that get to reroll, charge distances, can advance, and charge on the same turn. Mm-hmm. He's got two succubus, each with an arc-like glaive. He's got five witches, each with Shardet and Impaler. Did not trip out his heck tricks this time. He then follows it up with a battalion of the Cabal of the Black Heart. So yeah. Archon, Agonizer, Relic, Warlord, Archon, Husk of Blade. This is the weird part. In the elite slot, he took a Lahamian. Don't know why. Troop slot. He's got 6 units of 5 warriors. 5 of them have a blaster. And then this is totally old school. 9 Venoms, all of them with splinter cannons and splinter rifles. And of course, 3 Ravagers. This time he mixed them up a little bit. One with 3 disintegrators, the other 2 with 3 dark lances.
Okay.
He then follows that up with a spearhead detachment. It's got a Hemoculus with electrocorrosive whip. 2 one-man units of Talos with a dual Haywire Blaster and Macro Scalpel, and a Kronos with a Spirit Probe.
Ew. What does that do?
The Spirit Probe is... So the Kronos has 2 roles. One, it's sort of a... it's got a dinky Strength 3 Flamer on it, but the nice thing is if it causes a wound, you can repair a wound on a Drukhari model within, I believe, 6 or 9 inches. But the other reason you take the Kronos is it allows all Drukhari units within 6 inches to reroll ones to wound.
Oh, wow, okay.
And it's a hell of a lot cheaper than a Talos. About 30 points cheaper, so it helps to fill out the spearhead detachment nicely.
Okay.
So we got a lot of the same elements. We've got a witch contingent with shard nets to hold you in place. We've got a Coven's heavy hitter for close combat to take advantage of being held in place by the witches. And you got a fire base of Cabal to deal with the long range shooting. He's written a couple notes on the bottom. I can tell what he's probably going for is he sees all those guard players out there and he's kind of waving at them. Haha, all my Venoms are -1 to be hit. Regardless of range, you're now hitting on 5s. Good luck. Bring your mortars. Don't care.
Okay, then.
So both, again, very exciting times when you can see two armies from the same codex win a major event and the armies are fairly different. Let's take a look at third place, by the way. Adeptus Custodes. Yes, there is a little bit of guard in it, but not a whole lot. I really like what he did. He themed his list after the Alamo, so it's kind of cool. He took the Outriders detachment. He's got a shield captain on a Dawn Eagle jet bike. Got it right this time. Followed by 1, 2, 3, 4 Vexilis Praetors. You're going to help me out with those, Ray. What do those do? Interesting. So as I mentioned, they also have Acadian Battle Battalion mixed in there. So a little bit of guard, two company commanders, three infantry squads of two 10-mans, and then another one with a heavy with a mortar. And then he's got one, not two, but the standard three heavy weapon teams, all with mortars to help provide a little bit of support. And there's one more list I wanted to go over tonight, because in the post FAQ world, what do Anari do these days? So this list came in fourth place. It's an Eldari BL-10 battalion. So he starts with Yvrain as his warlord, a Farseer, as well as a warlock with Spirit Stone of Anathalan. I can't pronounce that right. He's got three units of five rangers. He's got a unit of nine Shining Spears. He's got a unit of 10 Dark Reapers with Exarch and Tempest Launcher. And he's got two Wave Serpents. And then he brings in Eldari Alaytok Airwing Detachment, two Crimson Hunters, and a Hemlock Fighter. Two Bright Lances on each of the Hemlocks and Spirit Stones on the Wraith Fighter. So all your old friends kind of shuffled about. All
right, then.
Still got the Rangers to go out and stake his claim for some territory. He's got the Dark Reaper, heavy support, laying down a fire base, and he's got the Shining Spears running around, charging things and killing things off of the objectives. With Yvrain giving them soul burst opportunities with Song of Ened. So not much has changed there.
Okay.
Do I look at the Thousand Suns just for you?
Sure, why not?
All right. Whoa, it's got some original artwork to go with the list. Expect nothing less from Goat Boy. It's pretty cool. So, the list that he actually brought, he starts with a Death Guard Spearhead Detachment. Comes with a Demon Prince with wings, Malefic Talons, and I can't pronounce this word. Superperating plate? Some sort of, I think it's a relic.
It's just special armor.
Yeah, and that's his warlord. He's got a unit of 14 Poxwalkers. He's got two units of two Foated Bloat Drones with Plague Splitters. And he's then got three Plague Burst Crawlers, also with Plague Splitters and Heavy Sluggas.
Okay.
Then comes the Thousand Suns Vanguard Detachment. It's got Ahriman on disc, Demon Prince, Wings, Malefic Talons, and not one, not two, but three Hellforged Contemptor Dreads with two Chained Fists and two Soul Burners.
Huh. Okay. That's a little bit out there.
Is definitely different. I like this list. It's a good travel list because it probably fits, a lot of models that are not too spindly, so they fit real nicely in the case. The exception of probably the Demon Prince's wings, but anyway. So you got two Demon Princes, both of them pretty much identical. One has the extra armor. All have the Malefic Talons. Go smash some face. He's got the large unit of Poxwalkers. One thing I'm trying to see, did he save points? He did not. He's right at 2,000 points, so he is not expanding the Plague Walker in the Plague Pox Walkers as they get bigger. The Foated Bloat Drone, I have to reread that. I remember that being really good at the time when I read it, and I was like, oh, there's no model for it, and they kind of like deleted it from the old gray matter.
I think that's the Blight Hauler that you're thinking of that had no model for a while.
I thought the Bloat Drone is the one with the lawnmower.
The Bloat Drone is that version. There is the version with the lawnmower, but the original Bloat Drone came out with the 8th edition starter set.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of something else then. Yeah, you're right. Probably thinking of the other guy. And as for the Plague Burst Crawler, yeah, I've got more experience with that than I really want to talk about. Thank you, Don.
And then, oh, just wait for his next list.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, he's been kicking around a couple lists, so I'm curious to see which one he finally settles on. But the the Contemptor Dreads with the Soul Burners Chain Fist. That's just rude. So
interestingly enough, that means he's either walking around with three Forge World Contemptors, or he kit-bashed his own.
Knowing Goat Boy, either or. So he had some right when Knights came out and that the Renegades came out. He was the first one. He came out with these converted these two Chaos Knights to get, and Gareth Hunt brought them to Nova to use. And you know how the Chaos Terminators have those like walrus tusks coming out?
Yeah.
What he did is he took from Warhammer Fantasy, what are the ogres ride some sort of like woolly mammoth thing? He took the horns from those and put them on the knights, so they look like giant Chaos Terminators.
I think I've seen that. I think I've seen a picture of that.
Yeah, it was really cool. So I was like, wow. And to see those in person, it was really cool. So I was like, wow, that was neat. But anyway, that is your wrap-up for tournaments this particular week. So Alamo GT in the books. Huge turnout. Congratulations there. As well as Storm of Silence. Glad to see them continuing their venerable ways, years of tradition there. Great events. Make sure to mark them on your calendars for next year. After the break, Ray and I will talk about what to expect next week. May 19th and 20th, the Grimdark returns to Phoenix, Arizona. The Scorched Earth Open 2018 is upon us. Arizona's premier 40K event being held at the Plaza del Rio Community Center located in Peoria at the intersection of 101 and Thunderbird Avenue. Scorched Earth Open. Details can be found at the Scorched Earth Open Facebook page or by listening to the Exterminatus podcast. Scorched Earth Open. Tickets are now available at the Best Coast Pairings app. It is a 6-round event limited to 60 players. Tickets are now on sale for the Scorched Earth Open May 19th and 20th. Welcome back. Let's wrap this up and talk about the current ITC Top 10. Lots of major changes over the past weekend, as you may have guessed. Starting off in 10th place, Mr. Hellhound himself, Mitch Pelham, finds himself 10th place, 161 points behind the leader with 4 events played so far. 9th place, Jeff In Control Robinson, 145 points off the pace and also 4 events under his belt out of a possible 5. Matthew Lee comes in 8th place. He also is 136 points off the pace, and like his predecessors there, also 4 events under his belt. So he still have all 3 of them have a lot of opportunity to move up by getting that 5th event. Daniel Sansone has 5 events, and he moves him into 7th place. He's 125 points out of 1st place. Anthony Bellum also has 5 events done, and he's 113 points behind the top player and currently sitting in 6th place. In 5th place, many argue to be the best Necron player in the ITC, Jessica Bowman, moves into 5th place, 110 points out of the lead, and has completed all 5 events. Andrew Ford comes in 4th place, 103 points out of the top spot, and also completed 5 events. Bruce Merker, 3rd place, 69 points, edging his way up toward the top, 5 events under his belt. Matt Root, only 4 events under his belt, but hey, when Adepticon Championship is one of them, you get to find yourself in 2nd place, only 53 points off the lead. That means your leader, once again, no surprise, is Joshua Death, still sitting on top with 617 points, 5 events completed. Interesting enough, Ray, I was just breaking this down. If you look at the number of events they've been playing, Josh is still winning at a high clip. He's still averaging 123 points per event when you look at those top 5 that he's competing at. And there's only Matt Root is scoring more points than that. He's actually averaging 141 in 4 events. So it's not just the 5 events, but Josh has done well. Now, interesting enough, I would point out that the 2 guys in 9th and 10th place, Jeff Robinson and Mitch Pelham, are averaging 118 points and 114 points per event, respectively. That would vault them into 3rd and 4th place. And when you take in respects that the events they need to go to the next few years, good. It's a very long season. Next few months are all larger events. So winning one of those particular events, it's easily getting over 100 points. They too could also vault themselves into the top spot.
I think it's important to note that, you know, it may be May, the beginning of May. There may not be a whole lot of major events left, but there's still a chance that Joshua Death could find himself ousted by December.
Well, absolutely. I think that there's still a fair amount. I think you hit it on the head. There are a fair amount of major events still left to go, but you got to remember our season's a little odd because we start in February. And so right now we're beginning of May. There's kind of that cool down right around Thanksgiving. So end of November, between November and the end of the year, so January 1st, there's almost nothing going on. And then all of a sudden there's this mad scramble for tournaments there for people trying to get their last few points in practice before LVO. And then it's like, okay, I have to do well in Vegas to contend. So realistically, there's only about four or five months left into the season when you really think about it that way. One other player I wanted to bring up, Matthew Ali, he's currently in eighth place. He is averaging 120 points per event. So he is actually, he would be in line for third place, actually. So assuming he continues to continue the pace that he's been operating at. So well done, all of you in the top 10. Ray, what events do we have going on next week?
So there are a huge amount of RTTs going on, but there's really only one event that looks to be of roughly the GT level or possibly higher, depending on attendance. That is the 7th Ambassadorial Grand Tournament held at the Game Matrix in Lakewood, Washington.
Sounds very formal. Like you have to wear a tuxedo to play in that event. I am the ambassadorial event. I come representing my country. This would be pretty cool. So we'll bring you all the news and results from that particular event. Hey, I know we're a 40K podcast, but just wanted to mention, I thought it was hilarious how many tournaments were on Friday, May the 4th for X-Wing. I thought those Beskow's carries were just lit up with X-Wing events. That was so funny. But anyway, thanks again for listening to the Exterminata podcast. Hope to hear from you next week. If, you know, you like what you hear, please go onto iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. If you think we royally screwed something up, hey, hit us up on Facebook. Let us know. We'll have you on the show and love to hear your side of the story, especially if maybe we don't quite understand how your list works and you did really well in a particular event. Love to have you on the show and can talk about it. Until then, again, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And we'll talk to you guys next week.